Before we get into the episode this week, I want to take this time to talk about violence against women, given the current climate, and yet the climate that has never changed. This week, the body of Sarah Everard was found after she went missing on March 3rd. She was walking home from a friend's house. She was kidnapped and murdered by a Met police officer. Sarah was identifiable only by her dental records. I am sad and I am angry that a young woman just wanted to get home to her safe space, but she never made it. As women, we aren't safe. We aren't safe as we walk outside. We aren't safe on the streets. And sometimes we aren't safe in our own homes. Sarah's name trended on Twitter, as did the hashtag, not all men. Someone said it correctly this week, not all men, but all women. We all have our stories of violence, being followed home, being abused, being raped, and being intimidated, all at the hands of men. We are all afraid to walk home at night. We look over our shoulders. We text friends to let them know we are safe. We share our locations. We carry self-defense items. We are told to take self-defense classes to keep us safe. We play out the what-ifs in our head, and we plan escape routes. We are constantly afraid. 6 women are killed every hour in the world, and this is the pandemic that we aren't talking about enough. 6 women. Usually by someone we think we can trust. Usually by someone we are in a relationship with. 97% of women in the UK have experienced sexual harassment. Almost 1 in 3 women aged 16 to 59 will experience domestic abuse in her lifetime in Wales and England alone. That figure is shockingly high and heartbreaking. Something needs to change. Last night, on Saturday, March 13th, a vigil was held in Clapham Common, London, by women grieving for Sarah Everard. This ended in some of the women being attacked by police officers. Given that she was murdered by one of theirs, this makes my heart heavy. If you need support, please reach out. We are always here. Educate your sons, reclaim the streets, smash the patriarchy, and solidarity to all women. Hi, welcome to episode 23 of Insanely Criminal. I'm Jem.
And I'm Emma.
And it's been a whole week since we did the first part of the Manson family.
I'm still recovering from the first part of the story.
I'm still recovering too from us talking about the Simpsons conspiracy and then finding out it was real.
Yeah, that's wild, really.
Yeah. So, poor Milhouse, named after Leslie Van Houten.
Poor thing. He wouldn't hurt fly.
He wouldn't, and that's the card he was dealt.
Or maybe he plays like the nice guy so you'd never suspect him.
Oh yeah, maybe. Maybe that's his whole thing. Maybe he's got like a darker side.
He was like unreasonably, maybe, but he was obsessed with Lisa. That's a bit dodgy.
Yeah. Always showing her the eyebrows. His beautiful eyebrows.
Honestly, the amount of times that on a dating profile I had that I liked The Simpsons, because, you know, I like to swap Simpsons quotes and memes with people. The amount of people that sent me the gif of Milhouse raising his eyebrows.
Oh, like,
this
no.
Is, like, the first time I was like, this is amazing. And then, like, the fourth or fifth time, I'm like, yeah, this is... It's been done, guys. So
I think I would have had to send, like, after a few, I would have had to send, like, the follow-up gif of Milhouse but getting pushed into the ambulance.
Oh, my God, I should have done that. Oh, missed opportunity.
Yeah. See? Next time, you just have to do it.
I mean...
Keep the meme on standby.
I don't plan on going back on dating apps because they are awful. So
I lasted one day and I was like, this is horrific. I think I had some really strange messages.
I started weirdly going on them at like the start of lockdown last year. And it was probably I went on Bumble, which is meant to be like the better one. And I went on that for about 3 months maybe, and it was just, first of all, a terrible time to be on a dating app because you can't meet any of these people. So I don't really know. I ended up with a few pen pals.
Oh really?
Yeah, well, yeah, just
I suppose,
like,
that's all you can do though.
Yeah, you can't. I was never going to be into like virtual dating because that's just a bit bizarre for me, and I'm not really up for video calls at the best of times. So video calls when you're on a date, that's just very weird. And then I just stopped going on them because I was like, this is just... It's just... Ugh. I think I said to you before, it's just... It is like being interviewed over and over again and having the same conversations with people. And then you get your fair share of just weird people. There was one guy who would literally just communicate to me in Simpsons GIFs.
Oh, no.
And I was like, dude, this is just, like, do you think this is, like, funny? Maybe it's funny the first couple of times, but, like, what are you actually expecting here? So I think I just unmatched him in the end, because I'm like, this is just, yeah.
Anyway. I think that's the thing, though, like, it's just the whole getting to know somebody thing. It's just so tiring. It's like, what's your job? Yeah, do you like your family?
How's lockdown going for you?
Oh, yeah, with an LOL on the end or something, just to be mildly funny.
Yeah, I never like once got to the stage of like meeting someone, hear all these things about, oh, we went for a walk in the park. Never happened to me. Never met someone on an app. I'm like, let's meet up at a park. It never happened.
Yeah, I don't think I could do it.
The only person who I met who I liked, who was like quite a long way away. So I'm like, well, that's never going to work, clearly. So, yeah.
I lasted, honestly, just that one day. And it was, I think it was like a 50-year-old man messaged me something like really explicit. And I was like, oh, is this all I can get now? Amazing. Delete.
One thing that I really liked is on Bumble, because it's meant to be, you know, the woman makes the first move. And I like that. Although it does put a lot of pressure. I found it very pressure inducing to have to make the first move because I'm like, oh my god, what do I say? I need to come up with a really good opener and all that. But one thing I really liked is some weird guy who was like, he was really into anime but kind of the like waifu type, only like really sexually explicit stuff.
Oh.
So I was like, okay. And then he just randomly sent me a dick pic. So I'm like, well, that's fine. But Bumble, like, detects potentially explicit messages and blurs them out. So I'm like, that's really good. Because I don't even have to look at this. You can choose to uncover it, but I never did. So I was just like, what are you doing? Like, don't do that. Proper shot him down. And he was like, oh, block me if you want. I deserve it. Like, get the hell off this and go have a word with yourself.
I'll never ever understand what goes through a man's mind when they think sending a dick pic is like suitable. Are they taking it and going, she will love this?
That's it. What's the thought process there? Like, I reckon she'll really be into a picture of my dick. Like, I don't know what the. I'd love to know, like, the thought process that happens there.
I mean, it's not even like, I don't even think it would be an impulsive thing for anybody to do. So they're definitely giving it quite a lot of thought, I would think.
It's a considered decision, isn't it? It's not, you know, it's, I guess, unless you've just got a load of them stored on your phone.
Oh.
Which is also a bit weird. Is it supposed to, like, turn us on? Or, like, woman I've ever spoken to has been like, you know what, I actually really like receiving dick pics.
No, I don't know anybody.
No. So
I've never looked at one and thought, oh, that's my future husband.
Yeah. how long have you been married? Oh, 3 years. How did you meet? Well, you know, I met him on Tinder. He sent me a dick pic and I was like, he's the one. He's the one for me. And happily ever after. Never gonna happen.
Oh, I still like that meme though, where it's like a man holding a bald rat and it just says men send dick pics, like so funny. It's like, that is true, it's just all true.
Anyway.
Yeah. From one dick to another, let's get back to Charles Manson. Perfect segue,
We're
getting good at this.
Yeah.
So, obviously, last week we spoke about the, I think brutal is still too nice of a word, like the brutal murders of Sharon Tate and her friends, and then the LaBianca murders and Gary Hinman. So, let's see what happened next. So, the trial and investigation. So the Tate murders became national news when the bodies were found on August 9th by the housekeeper. Detectives assigned to the case noticed that the writing found in the Tate home was also the same as the one found in the Hinman murder house. The Tate home murders were under investigation quite quickly, but the LaBianca murders had yet to be discovered by anyone. Which I hate, like... They were so brutally murdered and they're still in the house and nobody's found them. I just...
It's really sad, isn't it, thinking that that's how they died and they were just, like, left there. It's just... It is really depressing. That.
Yeah. So, with their Cielo Drive, we know that Stephen Parent had been visiting the caretaker, and the caretaker... that he was visiting was the caretaker of the property on Cielo Drive, and his name was William Garrison, and he was quickly taken into custody as a suspect, and he underwent a polygraph test and it came back that he was telling the truth, so he was released on August the 11th. Years later, Garrison did say that he witnessed part of the murders.
Shameful.
Yeah, like, how would you go? I think it was, like, in the 2000s. So that's, like, over 30 years that he's carried that with him.
Jesus.
I don't know. Like, nobody would have threatened him in any way. So he could have quite easily come forward. I didn't understand it.
Maybe he just, like, tried to block it out or something. You know, it must be... pretty traumatic seeing something like that. So
yeah, I watched a Charles Manson thing again the other night. I think it was on Discovery Plus, and they were like doing reenactments of the murders.
Oh.
And that was even a little bit too much for me, I think, after reading about the case and like recording last week.
Yeah.
Oh, it was horrible. I was like, this is a bit too graphic for a reality TV app.
there's learning about crimes and stuff, and it's important to learn about them, but there's a fine line between learning about them and sensationalizing them a bit too much.
Yeah, definitely. That just felt far too sensationalized, that show. It was don't think I'll watch it again. probably wouldn't recommend.
Was it on that oxygen thing?
No, it was on Discovery Plus. It's like a new app. Parts of it were okay, but just when they did the reenactments, it was really, really graphic.
Unnecessary.
Yeah, I think we all know what happened. We don't need to see a reenactment of someone carving war into someone's abdomen. I don't need to see it.
That's just not nice.
No. Not before bed either. It's a bit... So 19 hours after the LaBianca murders were committed, the bodies were discovered. Rosemary's son, who was only 15, was returning home from a camping trip. He became alarmed seeing all of the curtains still drawn, and so he called his sister and her boyfriend to come over. The boyfriend went into the home with Rosemary's son, where they found the body of Leno. They called 911 immediately, and detectives found Rosemary's body when they arrived. Oh, I just...
How awful for that kid.
Yeah, and to, I think, almost be smart enough to know that something was wrong, just seeing the curtains still closed.
Yeah.
That must have been horrific. Mm. Oh. 2 days later, the LAPD ruled out any connection between the Tate murders and the LaBianca murders. The police raided Spahn Ranch on August 16th. They arrested Manson and 25 others in connection with a major auto theft ring. Police seized weapons but later released the family members. It was the end of August and investigations were slowing down, but the detectives on the LaBianca case noticed a connection between the bloody writings on the walls and some Beatles songs. The Beatles again.
Mm.
There were some breakthroughs throughout the next couple of months, and on December 1st, 1969, the LAPD announced warrants for the arrest of Tex Watson, Patricia Krenwinkel and Linda Kasabian for their involvement in the LaBianca murders. Watson and Krenwinkel were arrested in McKinney, Texas and Mobile, Alabama, after being picked up by local authorities. Linda Kasabian was in New Hampshire and gave herself up. Physical evidence soon became apparent when fingerprints matched the trio and matched those at Cielo Drive. So they all did a runner after this. And I think even in 1969, they were still caught. I find that quite good police work.
Yeah.
But for Linda Kasabian too, giving herself up, that's got to be, I mean, I don't want to say bravery, but I wouldn't have expected any of them to actually give themselves up.
No, because they were all kind of under like Charles Manson's spell, and you'd be thinking, what's going to happen to me if I give myself up? Like, is he going to kill me somehow, or...
Yeah, I think that's what I would probably be worried about.
Yeah.
But then, I mean, because they were under his spell, would you think, if that was you, well, I'll just say that he told me to do it and maybe I'll get away with it.
That is another, interesting angle that maybe it was like coercion and that you would like get away with a reduced sentence or something if you say, well, he like forced me to do it kind of thing. So
yeah. I think, but then again, like, would they be that willing to give up all of this information because they loved him so much for some reason? So the trial began on June 15th, 1970, so quite a long time after.
Mm.
The prosecution used Linda Kasabian as their main witness. She had been granted immunity, but only if she told her version of events of what happened during the killings. Susan Atkins was also given a deal, but her deal was withdrawn. I can't remember why it was withdrawn, but Susan Atkins, so it's got to be something odd. So Manson, Watson, Atkins and Krenwinkel, and also Kasabian, were all charged with 7 counts of murder and one charge of conspiracy. Leslie Van Houten was only charged with two counts of murder, as she had only participated in the LaBianca murders. Judge William Keane gave Manson permission to act as his own lawyer, so a bit like Ted Bundy. But his conduct obviously was outlandish, and he was violating gag orders, etc. And his permission was denied before the trial even began. Which doesn't shock me.
No, I mean, it was kind of a terrible idea to even consider letting him act as his own attorney. But, you know, why on earth would you think that's okay?
I mean, represent yourself in a smaller charge, maybe, but for something so high profile.
Seven counts of murder. Yes, I will act as my own attorney. Yep, that is fine. No problem.
Have you ever seen clips of him, though, in the courtroom?
I haven't, actually, no.
Oh, my God. It's just him being like a Ted Bundy, but far more insane. It's very, very odd. I think there's clips on YouTube.
Yeah, that might be some light watching for after this.
Yeah, it could be some bedtime viewing. Manson appeared in court on July 24th for his first day of testimony. He appeared with an X carved onto his forehead. Nice accessory. He also issued a statement which said he was too incompetent to speak for himself. And the X was there to X himself out of the establishment's world.
I mean, this is the man who was going to be his own attorney.
Yeah, it just comes out. I'm going to carve this big X on my head.
And said he was too incompetent to speak for himself.
Yeah, but it's just his way of getting out of the whole thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, he's acted like this big guru the whole time, and that he's the new Christ, but now he's too incompetent to speak in court. So, oh,
my God.
Over the next few days, his female defendants copied the X on their foreheads, and over the coming weeks, so did most of the family, so they all appeared with the X's on their heads. Prosecution argued that Manson's main motive for the killings was the Beatles' White Album, and about how Manson had predicted the race war with his quote-unquote Helter Skelter. I just thought it was so odd that the prosecution would bring out like the Beatles for this. Be like, well, this is why he's done it. The Beatles are for Satanists. It's just...
I can't imagine. I think it's something to think about this. Like, if you're in court and you either you're prosecuting or you're defending a murderer, it must be like some of the things where you just think, I know this man is like so incredibly evil, but I need to like come up with like reasons and arguments and stuff, and it must be so difficult to do.
And yeah, like, I think you'd have to just look for anything you could but damning.
Surely, like, you shouldn't, as the prosecution, you shouldn't really need, like, well, he's crazy, he's insane, like, obviously. But the fact that they're like, oh, it's the Beatles really they're to blame for this. Put the Beatles on trial. McCartney.
Yeah, can you imagine? Bring them into the courtroom
imagine
now.
Imagine if they're like, yeah, we call to the stand the Beatles.
But yeah, like you said, like the prosecution wouldn't need anything like this to prove the killings, because you would just have to look at Charles Manson and the rest of them to know that maybe, just maybe, something was wrong.
Yeah, they're not quite right, I don't think.
know. Just a little bit.
Imagine trying to defend him, though.
Oh, God.
I mean, surely that the defence is where you would bring the Beatles into it. Because, well, yeah. He was heavily influenced by, you know, those wild, crazy teenagers, the Beatles. So, you know, diminished responsibility, I would say.
Yeah, I think you would have to say the diminished responsibility and probably claim insanity for all of them. That would be absolutely your only manner of, like, defence for these people.
In a lot of, like, high-profile serial killer-type murders, surely that's all you can really say.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I would not like to be a defence lawyer.
No, God, no.
But, I mean, if you had to bring the Beatles out, then that would be quite funny.
Yeah.
My first witness, Ringo Starr. So, let's get back to the Beatles. Your sponsor. So, this idea of Helter Skelter and the Beatles was also backed up with Linda Kasabian's testimony when she said after the LaBianca murders, Charles wanted to discard Rosemary's wallet in a black neighbourhood, which would then cause racial tension. Thus starting Helter Skelter again. That would have been his third attempt of Helter Skelter.
Just give it up.
I was talking to a friend of mine who listened to our first part, and he left me an audio message, and he was like, I don't know how Charles Manson got so far in his criminal career because he was so bad when he was younger. He just kept stealing cars and was always being caught. It's like, yeah, well, it's true. He's not a good criminal.
But then I think we said last time there were so many opportunities to keep him locked up.
Yeah, definitely. Like when he begged to stay. So we kind of have to say, yeah, he is a piece of shit or was a piece of shit. But then the system could have kept him locked up.
Absolutely.
And if you think of, like, the people, if some of the people in the family, some of them had, like, PhDs and they're really well educated.
Yep.
So imagine what they actually could have gone on to do as well if he'd have just been locked up for life. It's crazy.
Mm.
So if you've ever seen videos of the trial, I think they're everywhere for anyone to watch. It did become a circus, and family members loitered at the courthouse throughout most of the trial. They were all subpoenaed as witnesses, and therefore that meant that they would not be allowed to enter the courthouse when people were giving evidence in the trial. The members were now easily recognisable as they all had X's on their foreheads. I mean, why would you make yourself that recognisable?
Yeah, that's... Oh, maybe they wanted, like, the notoriety kind of thing.
Oh, yeah. Like, I'm part of this, guys.
Yeah, like, they wanted that kind of fame and yeah. Strange.
Prosecution witnesses were threatened to by family members, and I think one person was even badly burned in a very suspicious fire in his van.
Oh dear.
So I call Manson family bullshit on that one. On October 5th, Manson jumped across the table in the courtroom and tried to tackle the judge, but he was swiftly held down by officers and he was removed from the courtroom, as were his female defendants, who had suddenly started wailing and chanting in Latin.
This just gets wilder and wilder, doesn't it?
It does.
It's got, like, all the kind of hallmarks of weird satanic rituals. We've got X's on foreheads. We've got chanting in Latin. If it was backwards Latin, that would take the cake.
Oh, if it was like the old myth that if you play a record backwards,
I think it was it a Beatles record? If you play it
actually was. Yeah, yeah. I think it is a Beatles record.
Oh, for God's sake. We just come full circle every time. But yeah, I think all the women too, they were all dressed in identical dresses too. Oh, just to make it a bit weirder.
Just like a full-on cult, isn't it?
Yeah. On November 19th, both the prosecution and defence arrested without hearing or calling a single witness. So that's gone on for months and they've literally got nowhere.
Wow.
Krenwinkel, Atkins and Van Houten were outraged and demanded their right to testify. Their lawyers told the judge that the women wanted to testify, as they had planned to say that Manson was not involved and they had planned to take all of the blame for the involvement. Which doesn't shock me.
No, again, they're just like completely under his spell.
Yeah, and I'll never understand why. I mean, if he was nice to look at, but he had nothing.
Or a nice person.
Yeah. Or if he sent you like a Simpsons gif or something once in a while.
Nope, I'm seeing that from now on. That's a red flag. Unless it's somebody that I'm already like friends with, then it's okay. But random people sending me Simpsons gifs, especially in a dating capacity, that's a red flag. You heard it here first.
Yeah, I might use that as a red flag too, actually.
But any friends who any friends who currently send me them, please feel free to carry on, because that's fine. I know the deal there.
Yeah. We're quite safe.
Yes. Yeah.
The prosecution saw it all as Manson's fault. He had told the members to commit these crimes and wanted the women to testify so he could save himself. No big surprise.
Mm.
Krenwinkel said in 1987 that the whole trial was scripted by Manson. Which, again, is no surprise that he would want this scripted. He wanted it all to go his way.
Mm-hmm.
Manson testified the next day and spoke for more than an hour. He was blaming the actions on the music and he said, quote, "Why blame it on me? I didn't write the music."
Jesus. Is he literally blaming the Beatles here?
Yeah.
Jesus.
And he also said, "To be honest, I don't recall ever saying get a knife and a change of clothes and go do what Tex says."
Wow.
I bet he does.
He's just like, what? Spineless, like, oh.
I know, like, these people have just fallen at his feet for years, and then he's so quick to change and snap and be like, this wasn't me, this was all you. This was all you, and I don't remember anything.
Jesus.
Is he the original narcissist? Oh. For someone like Charles Manson, who wanted a race war, and for someone who wanted to cause so much destruction, again, he had no issue passing the buck onto all of these family members. This just became not his problem. This is not my problem. But that's just Charles Manson all over, completely. On January 25th, 1971... the jury all returned guilty verdicts against the four defendants on each of the 27 counts against them. During the penalty phase, Manson decided to shave his head and trimmed his beard. He told Waiting Press, "I am the devil, and the devil always has a bald head."
Wow.
Okay. So now all men with bald heads are the devil.
Noted.
I'm going to write that down. Stay away.
Do I have any? No, I know a few people with bald heads. They're not the devil, though.
No. They're not Charles Manson.
No, though. Definitely not. I hope they're not, anyway.
Oh, Jesus. Can you imagine? Oh, Jesus. On March 29th, 1971, the jury returned with verdicts of death against all four defendants. But what happened to Tex Watson? I hear you ask. No one's asking.
What happened to Tex Watson?
Yeah, well, he was still in McKinney, Texas, after he had been arrested when his fingerprints were linked to Cielo Drive. Mm. And he fought the extradition back to California, so he didn't have to stand trial with the other four. So he was kind of clever there. So he didn't get caught in, like, the big media frenzy.
He was the most evil one as well, I would say.
He really was. You know, I think we can all say, oh, it's definitely Charles Manson. He's the most evil. But I think Tex definitely was. The way he attacked them was just absolutely vicious.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, you know, everything was overkill, I think, for him. Completely. So he did get sent back, and his trial commenced in August 1971. And it only took 2 months, so by October, he had been found guilty on 7 counts of murder and 1 count of conspiracy. He did have a psychiatric defence, but he was sentenced to death. So it clearly didn't work there, the psychiatric card. But I don't think there was anything wrong with Tex in like a psychiatric manner. I think he just liked the power.
Yep.
Definitely. By 1972, the death penalty charges of all five had been reduced to 5 sentences of life in prison. Manson found some acceptance in prison with the Aryan Brotherhood. And his role in prison was to be a submissive to a sexually aggressive member of the Brotherhood in San Quentin.
Okay.
Nice little fun fact for the end of the trial.
Yeah.
I imagine, though, because he was so small in stature, that he probably could be picked on to become like the quote-unquote prison bitch to somebody. And, you know, we saw like when he played the insane game.
Yes, he's already.
When he was younger.
He's had like a messed up experiences in that regard, hasn't he? So,
So yeah, I could see it happening again quite easily. So, what happened to the family members afterwards? Some of these are very weird. So first we have Lynette Frome, and she went on to try and assassinate President Gerald Ford in 1975.
Why stop at all these murders? Let's go one bigger and try and assassinate a president.
Let's do it. Go big or go home.
Exactly. Like, what? I mean, you just... Oh, these people.
I know. She did try and escape prison in 1987, and this was so she could go and meet Charles Manson, who had cancer at the time. But she was caught 2 days later and was incarcerated in the Federal Medical Center in Carswell, Fort Worth, Texas. She remained a staunch follower of Manson, and even after her release in 2009, she said in an interview that she was in love with Manson and that she still is. She said that, I think, in 2019.
Wow.
So even though she has a partner, I think a long-term partner, she still loves Charles Manson.
Jesus.
I know. So she lives in New York State with her boyfriend, and her home is decorated with skulls.
Now let's just pause for a moment here, because so I have a lot of skulls in my flat, Not real ones, I hasten to add. Just like, you know, I'm a bit...
It's spooky. Of all the people who have sent you Simpsons gifts, isn't it?
Yeah, I've collected their skulls as my trophy. I absolutely haven't. I, you know, I'm a bit spooky, so I've got a lot of skull-type stuff around, but I am not a mass murderer. I just like to make that clear right now. And they're not real skulls. You know, they're all plastic or enamel or whatever. So let's not read too much into the skulls point, is what I'm trying to say.
This is why I put it in there. Because I knew you would have skulls in your house. And I know I have in my house too.
You put it in to provoke me. Is that what you're saying?
To provoke both of us. Because my house is like a little bit the same. And above my bed, I've got a cross stitch that says, Hail Satan. So
basically, what you've just said there is you are a staunch supporter of Charles Manson.
Yeah, I definitely am. I've got every single pressing of the White Album by the Beatles. So I only play it backwards. We are both Manson fangirls now.
Well, according to that write-up, yes.
I don't have any pressings of the Beatles.
No. Me either. But I do have a lot of skulls about the place. So.
Yeah, I've got the skulls and I've got the Hail Satan on the wall above my bed. So yeah, definitely not a Manson supporter. God.
Anyway.
Yeah, let's get back. Oof, now we've outed ourselves. So we're not going to have anything in common with anybody else coming up now.
Hopefully.
So, Patricia, hopefully
speak
not.
Speak for yourself, really.
Well, flag it up if anything crops up.
I don't think I will, though.
Patricia Krenwinkle remains imprisoned in the California Institution for Women in Corona, and she will be eligible for another parole hearing in 2022. She did an interview with Diane Sawyer in 1994, where she said, "Every day I wake up knowing that I am the destroyer of the most precious thing, that which is life. And I do that because that is what I deserve, is to wake up every morning and know that." Well, I mean, at least there's a little bit of remorse there.
I was going to say, she's not like, Lynette, who's just like, nah, Manson's the best. I still love him. At least she's like, okay, on reflection, maybe a few of the things I did were a little bit wrong.
Yeah, but I'm no longer a Manson stan. Yeah. I don't love Charles Manson. So we can give her like a little bit of credit there, but she's still a very bad person. So in the same interview, she said Manson had been lying and that it was him who ordered the killings, which... I don't think anyone ever needed to come out and say that, really. No. And she has been denied parole several times because she still poses a threat to public safety.
Fair.
Yeah. I say maybe keep her in. Keep her in. So let's see if we've got anything in common with Mary Brunner. She was arrested in 1971, along with other family members, for robbing rifles from a surplus store.
Never done that, so...
Nope, not done that one. What about this next one? I mean, the police said that she and the other family members were plotting to hijack a Boeing 747.
I've never done that.
No, this sounds like we're making a bucket list.
Things to do before I turn 40. Yeah. Hijack a 747.
Get some rifles. So if they hijacked the Boeing 747, the police said that they were going to threaten to kill a person on board every hour until Manson and the family members were released. Haven't done that. Brunner ended up incarcerated in the same prison as the other women, but she was released in 1977 and has stayed out of the public eye. Mm. So no longer possibly a Charles Manson fan. No. But I think she'd probably been heavily manipulated by Charles Manson.
Mm-hmm.
Because they were married, so. Or at least together. Ugh. Next. No affiliation to Milhouse in person, but by name. Leslie Van Houten. Along with the other women, she was kept separate from general population in prison. And they were a threat to other inmates, which is fair. But by 1975, she was moved to general population with the other women. She has been denied parole 23 times.
Jeez.
I know. I think I'd give up after maybe 10.
Yeah, absolutely.
Definitely. Governor Newsom said that she still poses as a large threat to society if she is ever released from prison. Again, very fair.
Mm-hmm.
Very fair. Next, Susan Atkins. So she published her autobiography in 1977, and it was titled Child of Satan, Child of God.
Okay.
That could possibly be my my dating bio.
Yeah, get that as your intro.
Oh, God, no, I'm not going back.
No, I think it's over. I think that ship has sailed for dating apps.
Would you read this book, though?
I'm quite interested in Susan Atkins, to be honest.
Yeah.
So possibly. I think it, like I said previously, I find it kind of fascinating from their perspective, like what their thoughts on why they did these things and the reasons why they thought at the time that it was right and all that, especially around her, because like she was, I think she said like she would have done anything for Manson. So
yeah,
I think it's interesting to learn about how deeply under his spell she was. It's really sad, but it's fascinating how, like, what a massive effect people can have on other people, particularly like vulnerable people.
Yeah, I think the same thing. I don't think I'd necessarily read something that Charles Manson would put out there, but I think if it was like Susan Atkins or any of the other family members, I think I would be more inclined to read it again, mm-hmm. just to see their perspective. So she was active in prison programs and she even taught classes to other inmates. She got married twice in prison.
Can you get married? I didn't know you could get married in prison.
Oh, yeah, you can. Mm-hmm. I think in some prisons, you can even have like conjugal visits, but it's in like a little house on prison grounds. So like your wife or your husband and your children can come and you can stay there for 2 or 3 days and watch TV and cook and do family things together.
Wow.
I think we have that here too. I'm sure there's some prisons in the UK where that's a thing, but only if you're like a really well-behaved prisoner.
Yeah.
Which is probably not many.
No.
So first she married Donald Lee Leisure in 1981 and Susan was his 35th wife.
That's just mind-blowing. 35 wives.
Yeah, and he only divorced her because he wanted another wife. He wanted to just keep going and going.
Is he just, like, going for a record or something?
Oh, he must be.
35 wives?
I know.
That's just... Wow, okay.
That's overkill in marriage for me. I mean, 35, why would you...
Well, even, like, 2 or 3 is pushing it, really, I think. 35? Yeah. Maybe not 2. All right, maybe like 3+.
Yeah.
But, you know, everyone's got different circumstances, but 35, come on.
Yeah, 35 is really taking like, piss, really. Oh,
well, asking someone to marry you. I've been married 34 times before. Are you okay with that?
I mean, if you don't see a red flag there, that's then...
the reddest of red flags.
Yeah. It's the maroon of red flags.
It's just the flashing lights, siren, fanfare red flag of red flags.
Yeah, it's everything. Oh, God. So she did marry again in 1987 to James Whitehouse, who was a Harvard graduate and 15 years her junior. Go for it, Susan. Yep, get it. In a parole hearing in 2000, Sharon Tate's sister was present and said that 31 years ago, she saw a young woman giggling and laughing about Tate's last breath and said, if Atkins was released, where was the justice? Which is 100% true. I think you have to take in the victims' families' feelings in this too. I don't think they do all of the time. I think probably for like these really heinous ones they have to, but yeah. Atkins was hospitalized in 2008 with an illness thought to be brain cancer, and she also had a leg amputated. She died in the Central California Women's Prison in Chowchilla in 2009. Her last word was amen.
Wow.
Oh, I know. I find that really chilling.
Yeah. Like her whole life had been a prayer or something.
Yeah. Like she was waiting to die, ooh, I think.
Yeah.
It's kind of... I don't know. I mean, I don't... I don't know. I just don't like it. Something popped up on my Facebook the other day, probably because my internet search history is very questionable during this podcast. And it was something like killer's final words on death row. And I was like, I don't want to read it.
Yeah, that's a bit too much for me.
Yeah, I think so. Sometimes I like to know what the last meal was because I like food. Still don't know what I'd pick. But...
I think we randomly, we did this on a particularly slow day a few years ago. We did this at work and we all, and I've probably got it on an email somewhere, we all picked what our last meal would be. And there's one guy who I used to sit next to who doesn't work with me anymore, but he had such a specific menu and it was just like, he was like really... how to describe him, he had like a lot of rules around food and like certain things could not be eaten on certain days and certain things could only be eaten with certain bits and you can't have a hot meal for your lunch and stuff like that. And his menu was just like crazy. For the next episode I might dig this email out and read through, I'll keep them anonymous obviously, but I might read through some of our last meals, and I think I've probably got mine somewhere, so we'll see if it's changed.
Oh, yeah, definitely, and I'll think about what I'd have. Mine would change on the day.
I think that's it. I'd think of it, but then on the day I'd be like, oh, change my mind, I don't fancy that, no.
Yeah, it's like, you know, when you cook your tea at night, like, oh, I don't want it now. In my head now, I just want Wagamama or a burrito.
Both fine choices. I'm thinking like a really rare steak, which just sound a little bit murdery on reflection.
It's because of those skulls you've got in your house.
I'm going down a dangerous path. It needs to be stopped.
Okay, you like the taste of blood, carry on.
But then I'm thinking, I had some really amazing sushi the other night. I'm thinking, sushi, like a massive sushi platter would be great. Raw fish, there's some worrying things emerging about me, I think.
Yeah, I saw the picture you posted of that sushi and I was so jealous. I haven't had good sushi for so long.
Honestly, it's a new sushi place that's opened about a mile from me. And it's like, we think it's just some kind of, just a family or like a bunch of students that are doing it. So we were a little bit like, is this a bit sketchy? Do we order it? But then it arrived, it was fine, it was fresh and delicious, and I'm fine, I wasn't ill, so I'm like, I'm definitely ordering that again. It was delicious.
Oh, I miss like good food. Where I live, you can't really get anything good. But since being in lockdown, all that's been getting me through it is, right, I'm going to go to this city and this is exactly what I'm going to eat. I'm going to spend a whole weekend just eating all the food I love.
And then you can come and visit me, and hopefully I'll have moved house and we can just go around and eat and drink and it'll be wonderful.
Oh, shall we go on a food tour?
Yes, a food and drink tour of the Bradford and District area.
Oh, I forgot to say I'm having a beer now for this episode. Yay. Which some people might be shocked at because I'm not really a big drinker, but...
What beer are you having?
I've got the Vocation one now. I'm almost finished. So good. It's as good as I remember.
Very close to my heart, Vocation. Hebden Bridge. Fairly close to me, so that's amazing. I have got a Brewdog versus Cloudwater New England IPA. Is one of my go-to beers. It's very, very delicious, very drinkable, and 6.8%, so even better.
See, now you told me a few weeks ago not to drink these strong ones that you have. Now I'm new in the game.
Because you've got to ease into it. You've got to build
definitely.
Up to that. You can't be going in with the big hitters. You've got to warm.
Years ago, I was like, oh, yeah, I'll just have a 10.5 as a starter.
This is me, you see. I'm like, if it's, like, 5 or below, I don't want to know. Maybe that's my tagline.
Yeah. 5% or below, you don't want to know. Does that go for men, too, if they're a 5 or below?
Obviously it does.
So now we know you like your men like you like your beers. Yeah.
Strong, juicy. not sure where I'm going with this.
Yeah, what else could we use? Let's have a look on the back.
Pillowy mouthfeel.
And unpasteurized. Is this how we're really going to find men now, isn't it?
Yeah, do you have a smooth delivery and are you dry and hoppy? Because you're my kind of guy.
But only if you're a 5 and above. Oh my god.
Anyway, let's talk about Ted Watson.
Okay, yeah, we're on to him now. But I've barely written anything about
he doesn't
him,
deserve
about
it.
What happened afterwards. Exactly. I thought, screw you, Tex. I don't like you.
I called him Ted Watson, really... didn't I? Tex.
Did
Tex Watson. Apologies.
Ted.
That's what 6.9% does to you, see?
Yeah, see? If you're on the 4.4 like me, I've got very low standards.
So Tex Watson.
Yeah. He published his autobiography in 1978, and that was called Will You Die For Me?
No, I would not read that.
No, sir,
no, I would not die for him either.
And he has been denied parole 17 times and is still incarcerated in Richard J. Donovan Correctional Facility in San Diego. And that is the end of Tex Watson.
Good.
I just didn't want to because of the very strong hatred, and he's just vile.
Yeah.
So let's get to the main man himself.
Finally.
Finally. The man we've been waiting for. So, Charles Manson. During the 80s, he gave a few interviews to mainstream media, which were recorded at the California Medical Facility. This is also the decade in which the X on his forehead had become the swastika.
Obviously, yep.
Yeah, very famous. Did he bring it back in fashion?
Awful.
I
Well, that's obviously because he was in the Aryan Brotherhood too. That's got to be it. Like, he wouldn't have done it for shock value. In 1984, he was set on fire by another inmate, which caused 20% of his body to be affected by third-degree burns. Yeah. In 2007, a 1987 interview of Manson unshackled and, of course, unruly was aired on MSNBC. Previously, only 7 minutes of this was aired on TV. Manson was caught with a phone in 2009 and had to use this phone to contact people from all over the country. And it was never known if he had used this for criminal activity. Can you imagine just getting a random phone number, answering it, and it's Charles Manson in prison?
It's Charles Manson. How are you doing?
It's me, your boy, Charlie. You would on. You'd think you were on like a radio show and being pranked.
Yeah, you were being like catfished to the extreme.
Oh God! Can you imagine being catfished by Charles Manson?
Or someone who pretended to be someone else and it actually was Charles Manson?
Oh God,
that's gonna be. Worse.
I do love watching Catfish, though. It's so
I've never
good.
Seen it, to be honest.
Oh, the best one was when a guy from the US, obviously, thought he was talking to Katy Perry, and Katy Perry lived in the UK. So they travelled here. They met the girl. It wasn't Katy Perry, but he believed that Katy Perry was behind the scenes playing a prank.
Wow. Fair enough.
I know. Charles Manson recorded an album of acoustic songs, which were additionally produced by Henry Rollins.
That's an interesting flex, I think.
Yeah, I'm not a big Rollins
no,
fan.
No, I'm not either.
I was telling a friend this earlier. I watched, when I was doing the West Memphis 3, obviously I'd seen West of Memphis, the Peter Jackson thing, loads of times, but Henry Rollins is in that. And he did so much like to help the West Memphis 3. And I fully, fully back that and totally respect him. But in the interview, he was sat in an alleyway just talking. Then all of a sudden, a random Henry Rollins fan comes out of nowhere. And he's like, wow, I love your work. And Henry Rollins just shakes his hand and points at him. I was like, oh, this is too cheesy for me.
He's all right. I think he... Yeah, it's just, I didn't know that. That's interesting.
Yeah, I didn't know this either until I wrote it, that he had done that. But again, yeah, it is like a total weird flex if he's helped inmates like the West Memphis 3, who are totally innocent, to then help Charles Manson.
Yeah, it's, I guess it maybe comes from a place that nobody surely is beyond redemption, and maybe it's like a bit of a prisoners should still be allowed like a creative outlet and stuff like that, and maybe that's part of their rehabilitation. So it's just, it's just an odd little fact.
Yeah, definitely. Only 5 copies were pressed, and Rollins has 2 of them. So. If you want one, hit up your boy Henry. He might be able to hook you up with some Manson hits. In 2017, Manson became unwell and was suffering with gastrointestinal bleeding in California State Prison in Corcoran. And he was rushed to hospital in Bakersfield. He died on November 19th of a respiratory failure and colon cancer 2 days before my birthday.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. So that is the end of them. But then I was thinking about what you brought up last week, like with the Alkaline Trio song. And then I was like, there's so many other songs. And I don't know if you know, but Nine Inch Nails recorded an album in the house in Cielo Drive. And the video for Gave Up was filmed inside there.
There's another, there's a band, some hardcore band, I can't remember what their name is, but they have got a song called Cielo Drive that I remember.
Yeah. They're just so... The Manson family have just stayed really, really relevant in popular culture, especially with musicians.
Yeah, I think it's just like, because it's got a lot of elements of like cultism and potentially like maybe a Satanist angle, which I think is unfair because like actual Satanism isn't all about like killing people and sacrifices and stuff like that. But there's a lot of kind of, and maybe that's where it stemmed from, like the stereotypical kind of murderer vibe, like the female members of the Manson family chanted in Latin and all that kind of stuff. And it's, you know, it's become like a bit of a, almost like that's what you base like your typical kind of evil person on, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's far more evil people out there than these, but yeah, I think especially in the music scene, it always goes back to Manson, and I think it's for the edge. Like, you put Charles Manson's face on something and you're straight away going to get people questioning, oh, what's that? And it'll be someone's album or something like that, and easy promotion, I guess. So Neil Young was also friends with Manson, and they sometimes hung out together with the family. And he wrote a song, "A Revolution," "Revolution Blues," about the family. And in 2008, he said that meeting Charles Manson was, quote, spooky times. And he was not a happy guy, but he seemed to have a hold on the ladies, which to me tells me everything I ever need to know about Charles Manson. And we've done it. It's the end of the Manson family. What a wild ride. Very wild ride. Ah, how do you feel after all that Manson stuff?
Tired. Like I need a shower.
Yeah. In bleach. Yeah. So, yeah. And I think next week you might be doing an episode.
I am doing an episode. I watched a film earlier this week that has given me some inspiration. So I will do my premiere podcast where I lead on these or this specific person or persons, not to give anything away.
We won't find out until next week. I'm looking forward to it. Because I think I told you that I don't know too much about it either, so it'll be like a school day.
I think it'll be an interesting one, and a lot, as with a lot of these people, a lot has been written and said about these or this person. So I'll see what I can uncover about them, or there, or the, or it, or that person.
It.
Trying not to give it away.
I thought you were almost going to say who it was. I thought it was just going to slip out.
Nope.
Be the person or persons or family. Yeah. Not another family. No, not another family.
Not another family this time. You can be sure of that.
Yeah, I think we'll stay away from the cults for a good few weeks. Oh, so... Thanks everyone for listening. We've had really good feedback actually about our first episode.
Yeah, it's a bit weird for me because a few people that obviously I'm friends with have been like, I listen to your podcast and I'm like, oh my God. But they seem to enjoy it.
I know, I hate it.
We've got a good little dynamic. So I think I'm enjoying it. I hope you're enjoying having me. I'm enjoying it.
I am. And yesterday we hit 1,000 listens, which to me is like, oh my God, I thought 5 people were going to listen to this.
That's really cool.
I know 1,000 isn't a lot because it's still like a really small podcast, but I'm like, oh my God.
That is really good though.
I'm yeah. Soon we'll have the private jet. Yeah. No, we're just going to be going here. We're going to record an episode from Cielo Drive.
Oh, we're going to be.
We're just going to be on
the beach in the Caribbean, just recording the podcast.
On the run.
Sipping it, yeah. Sipping a cocktail. Yeah.
Some sushi.
With some sushi. Absolutely.
Definitely the sweet life. So, thanks everyone for listening. Thanks for all the feedback. We really appreciate it. I still get very nervous about doing podcasts that people won't like it. But yeah, everyone's really enjoyed part one. I've had lots of audio messages on my phone about
it. Excellent.
It's quite funny. So thank you, everybody, and to Emma.
Thank you for having me.
Well, like I told you, I wouldn't
come on. Thank you.
Join me.
Too kind.
It's because we have so many skulls and we are now going to start a cult together with our sausage dogs.
The cult of sausage dogs, beer and pizza.
Yeah, the new family. Yep. So,
yeah, we'll leave it there. We'll see you and, okay. Well, you'll hear us next week.
You will. Thanks for listening, everybody. Bye.